Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Sharon Abbott, and I am your host today on Get Published Now, The Secrets of Getting Published. I am an author and a speaker. I have 10 books published. In fact, just got my 10th book yesterday. I was so excited. And there's a big mystery about getting your books published and even why you should get a book published. But today I'm going to walk you through the process so that you can actually begin to understand how easy it is and find some of the secrets that I have developed over the years. I spent 20 years in the printing industry and found that there were some printers who did some things well and affordably. There were other printers who did other things like books very well and made them affordable. So we're going to look at a lot of the things that have always been a mystery to most people. But today I want to focus a little bit more on why you should actually write a book and why you should get published. So I'm going to start out by talking about a couple of the things that I've created. One is an easy process to be able to write a book in 1 hour a day. 6 weeks later, the book is completely done, edited, and ready to print. And what you want to do is look at creating an outline. So this is just like any outline you've ever done. And you want to have 1 to 15 chapter titles. So no matter whatever your topic is, you want to be looking at this outline as a way that it is a guide to help you get your writing done more automatically without having to stop and think, what am I going to write next? So you start with a 1 to 15 to 18 chapter titles, then 15 to 18 talking points per chapter. Those are your paragraphs. And then 3 to 5 bullet points for every paragraph. And then when you lay it out that way, it takes about 3.5, maybe 5 hours to do the research and make sure that you have everything set up so that you can actually go start to finish and make sure that your book is done. One of the things that I like to recommend is that as you're writing, if you happen to mention someone, put their name in the chapter in an Excel spreadsheet with your outline so that you can go back and make sure that you have their permission to use their name in the book. And if you refer to any books or topics or I use a lot of self-help programs, and then I'll mention them in the chapter, but then I'll also take and have that mention in a chapter under its own resource chapter title. And that way people can easily flip back to the resources at a later date and refer to a process that I might have talked about. And one thing that I think is really important is for everyone to realize that I believe everyone has at least one book in them, and it is not as monumental as you might think. When I wrote my first book, it was January 15th, 2000, and I wanted to be a speaker at an expo in Sacramento where it was for small businesses, entrepreneurs, starting out predominantly. So I called the event coordinator and I said, I heard you're doing this wonderful event and I want to be your speaker. And he said, so tell me the name of your book. And I said, oh, geez, I don't have a book. And he said, well, then you can't be my speaker. And I said, well, when is the event again? And he said, June 3rd. And I said, no problem. I'll have the book, I promise. And he said, what's the title going to be? And I said, Mixing It Up. And so I set out January 15th to write this book, and I work really well with timelines. So I knew I wanted the book done by May 1st, so I backed it out that how many pages I had to do every day. I didn't do write for an hour, but I did how many pages. And then I took all of the newspaper articles that I've ever written, and I copied them and sorted them and put them in an order that I thought would make a really good book format, and boy, was that complicated. I think that's why it actually took 5 months rather than 6 weeks, is because I was trying to use information that was already written. And when you're following an outline, the flow is so much more comfortable that it doesn't take as much time. It's not as cumbersome. So I made every mistake you could possibly make, starting with using material I'd already written and then trying to fit it into the book and somehow make it flow without repeating things. And then the other thing I did is I hired three different editors. One was for content. So when I referred to leads groups, those are the groups where business people come together and they exchange information that they've maybe met someone during the past week that could help the other person do more business. But I would say leads group, lead groups, or leads groups. And this editor would actually go back and make sure that everything was consistent throughout the book. It seems like a minor contention, but when a reader is distracted because of anything that is an inconsistency, then it really takes away from the value, the content, and the information you're trying to deliver to your reader. So you want those consistencies to be there. Now, the copy editor was absolutely amazing because I had anticipated a chapter order, and then she was able to explain to me why specific chapters needed to be moved around, and it was absolutely wonderful. And then, of course, the third editor is the one who actually does the overall look of the book. The pages are paginated top, bottom, left, right. That there are consistencies when I use italics on specific things. I don't normally underline words, but there were a couple of things that were underlined, so she made sure that was right, or if I formatted a list a specific way in one chapter, that the next list in another chapter would be formatted exactly the same thing. So those three editors, and they ended up, I think the total to hire them in 2000 was right around $2,300. And it was really painful. Now, that part took about 6 weeks on its own. And I have found since then that I would rather hire a single editor after the book is done. And then I always recommend that you read your book through start to finish at least two or three times before an editor actually sees it. And if you use PCs, Microsoft Word has an option where you can actually have it read out loud what you have written. And I think writing the book in Word is really beneficial because of the great editing tools and the phrases and the run-on sentences. If you're like me, I love run-on sentences, and then I have to go back and chop them up so that they're a little more easy to palate when you're reading. And the other thing is you might want to know is that paragraphs that are, you know, more than 10 lines are distracting to a reader. So you want to keep your paragraphs short and to the point without being repetitive in what you're actually writing. So we want to make sure that everything that you're doing, you're going to save as much time as possible when you're writing the book so that you can get to the end where it's actually finished. So those are a couple of the tips that I have found over the years. The other thing is I have a lot of friends. One's a school teacher. I have one who actually is an author. And we trade books back and forth and read for each other. Because a lot of times when you're writing, what you are thinking about is in your head, but it's not actually clear when you put it in writing. So you sometimes make assumptions. I know I do, where I make assumptions that somebody understands what a concept is. So if I'm talking about how to create a blog, I'm assuming that most people understand a little bit of WordPress. So I have to go back, number one, make sure I'm not using jargon. So to be very conscious of explaining concepts so that even if somebody has never heard of it, that they're going to feel like they actually have a good understanding of what I'm talking about. And that helps it keep the reader engaged in what you're writing. So then the next thing is looking at setting up the graphics for your book cover. And you know, the colors that you want to use portray a lot. They portray a message. So if you're writing about something financial, the usual is black and green, with the green being the dominant color and the text being more black. And it actually says a message about money. Or you can use gold, which has always been like a success concept, like 24-karat gold. if you use that level of color, then you'll have more of a relationship with the book title and the color of the book. I have always been of the belief, because of my graphics and printing background, that book covers should not be red, but you could actually have moderated tones of red with a little bit of red blue or red orange. But a completely red book, if you think about a stop sign, it has in one way a mental image of stop and maybe pick up the book and look at it, but it also might have an interpretation of stop, don't even go any further. So you want to be careful on some of the things that are real obvious. When you look at a graphic designer, and there's many people just right around you, especially with social media on Facebook, lots of graphic artists that you can work with. And then a couple of other resources that I like to use are Elance, E-L-A-N-C-E, like freelance, but elance.com. And then also Fiverr, F-I-V-E-R-R.com. And you can get some graphics done that you sure will have a lot of things to choose from. And then if you work with local colleges, there's a lot of very talented young artists at the colleges that you can work with. My first book cover cost me $1,500, and I think now I pay somewhere in the neighborhood of $150 for a book cover, unless I design it myself. Sometimes they're much easier for me to design myself. And so looking at what it is that you want. Now, I always suggest to new authors that you go to the local bookstore and walk around and see the colors that appeal to you. If there's a specific color that might make you want to stop and pick up a book, because if you're writing about self-help, something like teal and burgundy, they're drawing colors, so they draw people in. And so those are really good colors to work with when you're designing a book cover. And then also looking at the type that you use. And a lot of people without the printing background, you might not understand how valuable the type is. But if you are talking about self-help, you don't want a typeface that's really bold and heavy and sans serif. That's without the feet on the characters. So a sans serif type is something like Helvetica, Arial, that most people use. And then a serif typeface might be something like Garamond, which is probably one of the most popular ones that you can use, or Times Roman, which is pretty standard. Times Roman doesn't have the character, like the differentiation between the characters. So I actually prefer Garamond, and especially within the book and the text, because the Garamond typeface actually brings the characters together so that each word is much easier to read than some of the airiness of the Times Roman. So just little things that in the long run they might make a difference. And then when you have your book all laid out, there's a number of pages, there's definitely 20 pages at least, before the first chapter starts. And what we look at are things like the foreword, the dedication, the table of contents, the introduction, and then also a couple of title pages. And on the foreword, you could actually find somebody who is related to the field that you're writing about. Look on their website, look at things that they have written, and then write a foreword that they would write using their words. And then ask them in an email, or if you're friends with them on Facebook, if they would mind writing a foreword, and you've written something that they can actually use as a guideline. And that's probably the easiest way of getting a foreword, and it's really nice to have somebody who is from the industry who is well-known do that. Most people who are authors will cooperate and go along with that, because they know what it was like when they were getting started. So you'll find that authors are very generous. Now, one of the other things that you want to look at is your resource and whether you want to index your book. I don't index my books, but I do have lots of resource information in the backs of the books. And then I also put all my website information, my previous books and explanation, my training programs, and even the CDs that I have available. So I put a catalog in the back of each of my books so that you can actually see some of the other materials or some of the other programs that I'm working on. And it's nice because it helps people see that it is not just a one-thought trend that you're working on. So you can actually have them go to your website and actually look at some of the other things that you might have in your bookstore that you've set up on your website. And since we're talking about websites, today my preference is a website blog and WordPress because it is the easiest to use, but it's also going to be the best way for you to get rankings on the search engines and traffic pulled back to your site. And so you want to look at something that's very simple, that you can have a custom banner that matches the colors. And again, you can go to Fiverr, F-I-V-E-R-R.com, and have somebody actually change the colors of any blog design. If you like the look of the blog, then they can change the colors to match the colors of your book cover. And you can have them also change the typeface within to match whatever you've decided on the interior of your book. So that's branding. That's kind of a simple way of looking at everything that you do should look exactly the same. So if you choose Garamond in your book, your blog should be Garamond. Your business card, your name, your website should be in Garamond. And then the banner itself, you can also have created by the graphic artist, but it should have a picture of you and a picture of the book, and then the title of the book with the subtitle. And I really love to see the interesting banners that some of the authors have created because it makes it more enticing to actually look further rather than just have the name of the book, which I know a lot of authors still do. But when you look at a banner, you can customize a banner, and there's several different blog styles, the themes that that actually come with it automatically. Most themes are, there's no charge for them, but you can start out with a specific theme like 2010, which is the standard WordPress blog theme, and then later you can customize the theme. But in 2010, you can upload your custom banner, pick colors, so it makes it a little bit easier to make the blog itself look like it's yours specifically, like you're really designing it so that everything is going to look the same. And there's probably several things that you're not aware of with the blog, but there's certainly a lot of blog classes that you can take. You can hire a virtual assistant to actually help you do some of the things that you don't understand and frankly don't want to know, because there's so many things that change constantly that you might want to just turn over some of the management of your blog to someone else. You want to be able to create an inclusion letter that you're going to send out to anyone that you mention in your book, and you can have your social media should match what your book is about. So when you have a blog that's the name of the book, so I have my new book, it's called About Face Traits Tell Tales, and it's all about face reading. And so the website is aboutfacetraits, TRAITS.com. And you'll see the book title is there. The banner looks like the book title. And so everything is consistent, the colors, the typeface, everything is much the same. And I can actually have a virtual assistant, if I choose, write posts for me. And the average post is 250 words. And the first 3 months, you want to have a new post every day. So a lot of times what I'll do is I'll actually take the outline and write a 250 post based on the outline in the same order that I've written the book, but it's not exactly the same as the book. And so that makes it really easy for me to keep the blog itself on target so that it has a enough information to entice people who want to come back, but it also is very logically tied to the same order of the book. And then we also put on the blog the cover so that people can actually buy that. And you can do that if you have a online terminal for merchant services, or you can do it with PayPal, which is what a lot of people do. And these are the things that you need to set up before the book is released. So it's a lot of the things that you can do along the way as you're writing the book. So typically I ask my authors to start their blog at the same time they start their book. So by the time the book is published, that the website actually looks like it's been intact for a while and it's not brand new. And then all of the things like the search engine registration of the website is catching up with, like, showing that you have traffic coming to your site. In fact, one of my authors, Sue Kopecks, her book is called Wet Dog Millionaire, and it's wetdogmillionaire.com. She was selling a book a day a month before the book was actually printed. And I love that because it's the way the plugins are set up. It's the way that we design the whole process of being able to have a system that pushes people back to your blog, and then when they see the blog, there's usually a percentage, so it's called a conversion rate. When somebody actually looks at your blog, how many people then turn around and actually buy the book? So that's a great example with Sue, and I really thought that was phenomenal because I had never done that with my books. And then the printing of the book, I have several resources that I use, and, you know, I was just talking to a commercial printer that I've known for years, and I had taken him a copy of one of my books that was print on demand, and it's pretty much like a very high-speed, modern, incredible copy machine. But what you do is your book format is in a PDF, so you write it in Word. It's one long file. You convert it to a PDF, and then they have software that automatically paginates it. So page 1 is opposite page 200. Page 199 is opposite page 2, and then the book meets in the middle at page 76 and 77. And that way nobody has to sit there like we used to and then copy and paste the pages opposite each other, so the book would actually come out printed in the offset process. Well, the offset printer that I talked to has a Miele. It's a great big whip press, and he's been in the printing industry for over 30 years. And I showed him my print-on-demand book, and he was so surprised at the quality. He said that he literally could not have told whether the book was printed offset or that was printed in print-on-demand. So the quality is so amazing. And you can order as few as 25 books at a time, and the average 200-page book is about $5 a book. And then the average sales price of the book is $14.95 to $20, $19.95. And so there's a nice profit margin in there for authors now. And the size of the book, the finished size, is 6x9, and there's margins that you want to go along with, like 3/4 inch on the inside margin and 1/2 inch all the way around top, side, and bottom. But I like bottom page numbers, but you can put your page number at the top. But there's 1/2 inch between where the page number is and the line of copy is. So just be conscious of some of those typical things that you'll find are better formatting concepts. The average point size is 12 to 14 point in type, and that makes it a lot easier for people to read and doesn't feel like it's too crowded. So one of the things that you want to look at is while the book is off being printed, and I recommend only doing 25 your first run and then passing those 25 out to people and having them give you feedback. You know, was every concept explained well? And was there enough information about the things that you were writing about, or was there too much information? So one of the things that my second run of About Face, the Traits Tell Tales, is I'm going to add a lot more graphics to the book. And I got that feedback from several of the people that I had done a book signing over in East West Bookstore in Mountain View a couple of weeks ago. And I thought, you know, after talking to them, that the graphics are a very big part of explaining the traits that people have in their faces. So my next edition will actually probably have another 60 graphics in it, which will make it a little easier to relate to the text. So the next thing you want to do is start looking at some of the online bookstores. So everybody knows about Amazon and Barnes & Noble, but there's actually a list of about 50 different online bookstores that you can register your book online. But I'm going to tell you a secret. If you do not use a print-on-demand resource that is related to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, then you end up with the control over the price of your book and the inventory. So keep to the independent print-on-demand publishers, because I think you'll find that, like the big shock for me in 2008 when my sixth book came out, I put it up on Amazon and I was using Lightning Source, which is actually owned by Amazon, and the very first day, instead of $19.95, the book was reduced to $12.95, $13. It cost me $5 to print it, but Amazon keeps 55% of the sale price of the book. And so they were taking, you know, $7, and it cost me $5 to print. That was $12, and I still had the graphics and the editing to incorporate. So I had factored that into 1,000 books, and it came out that I was in the hole $1.05 per book. So I pulled the book off of Amazon. And when I changed printers, the first sales program that I did, I had two people that went right to Amazon. And we're going to talk in future shows about some of the marketing concepts that will help you sell books without having to even go outside of your own home. But what I did was a campaign, and I had two people out of 200 that bought the book on Amazon. And I understand people are very comfortable buying books on Amazon. They have accounts set up. They have all their information there. But we'll even talk about why you can entice people to go to your site rather than Amazon. And then the big surprise was that Amazon sent me a check for $40 for the two books that I sold that were $24.95. So we're going to talk a lot about all these different ways that you're going to learn how to be in control as an author and not give up all of your profit. So I was actually on the Oprah Winfrey Show back in 1991 with an author, Pat Evans, and I had contributed material for her book, which is on verbally abusive relationships, and she has a major publisher. Now, publishers today only print the book. They do nothing unless you're a big name. And when you get an advance, Pat gives $20,000 to $25,000 for her advance. They insist that you are accountable for every dime of that advance, and it all has to be spent in marketing. So Pat gets the books, she calls the radio station, she books her interviews, she calls the bookstores, she puts the books in her car, she drives all over the place doing book signings at bookstores. And Pat has never made more than $50,000 a year. And so she gets 35 cents a book for having a big name brand publisher. Whereas when I sell my books, I get $15 a book. Now, the interesting thing is Pat's publisher makes $350,000 a year on her books just for printing them and doing nothing else. And then Pat's had to hire, on top of it, PR agencies, the firms that actually get her some of the visibility on television, That's a little bit harder to do than radio. But it's a lot of extra effort on her part, and I tallied it up one time, and if she had printed her books herself, she would have made $500,000 a year rather than $50,000 a year. So there's a big difference because she still has to do all the work regardless, but she really likes having the name of that publisher on her books. So, you know, it is a matter of choice back then, but today most new authors will find that even though there are many agents out there saying that they can get you published, if they get you published, it's going to be through print on demand because the major publishing houses made an announcement about 3 years ago that they were not going to take on any more new authors. And in fact, they laid off 50% of their editors, so they don't have the capacity to read books and edit and choose and, you know, come up with the team that actually helps put all that together. So, you know, just realize it's independently publishing. Do not refer to it as self-publishing. And you just want to get into the habit. It's independent publishing, just like the films that are indie films. And they have such a great reputation in all of the different film festivals. Well, that's how books are now going. It even looks like music is going that way, doing independent producing of music, because it puts the artist in control. And that's what we really want to do, making sure that all of our authors know exactly what they need to do and how they're going to do it. So there's one of the other steps you want to look at is making sure that the Library of Congress has a copy of your book. And the interesting thing about this, once your book is in the Library of Congress, you can have friends from all over the country in the United States, and I'm not sure about other countries, but they can. You can have a friend go into a library and request a copy of your book, and the library will typically purchase it. So then that's a nice way of selling books to libraries, is just to start getting them out there. The copyright, you know, this is a big challenge for most authors because we could spend all of our time tracking people down who copy our intellectual property. And really the cost of going after them makes it ineffective. So you want to look at protecting yourself, and there are copyright people that you can send a copy of the book for $75 and it is considered copyright. I do another version where I put a copy of the book in a sealed signed signature requested envelope and put it through the regular postal mail, and then I never open it up, and then I keep that in a safe place so that if anything really came up, that I could prove the date that I had written that material. So what I want to do is to make sure that you have all of the resources available for you and looking at the things that will make it easier for you long term. And you can probably tell there's an order. There's a sense of what needs to be done, what needs to be done next. And so one of the next things you want to do is create press releases. There's many resources. There's freepress.com, prweb.com. There's just an incredible amount of resources available that you can have your book listed in newspapers, magazines, periodicals. A couple of the other free ones are prfree.com, prleads.com, myfreepr.com, prinside.com, and PRWeb is now a fee-based, but they have some incredible packages that you can pick and choose how much a month that you're going to spend on getting a book published and or actually getting it out into the world for press. Now, book reviews can be done by people who want to help you get your book out there. So I put about 200 books out into the world before I actually start asking for book reviews. So I want to have a better feedback on what the reviews are. But the really great thing is when your book is on Amazon, you can have people who have read the book go to Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com and have them put a review on those two sites, because the online bookstores really have a lot of clout when it comes to people researching a book. So that is a really great thing your friends can do for you. You're also going to want to be set up with a merchant account, and a merchant account can be now a couple of different ways. So you can have the standard one, you go to the bank, you apply for a merchant account so that you can take credit cards when you're out in the field and people are buying the cards. When you sell books at a bookstore, the bookstore takes the sale and then usually gives you 50 to 60% of what you do sell when you're doing a book signing. You can also have, a lot of the merchant accounts have a virtual terminal that you can use online. So that's another way of doing it. A really cool thing that's come out this year, there, of course, is PayPal. I think the first one I saw was called Square Up, and then Intuit has a device that plugs into your iPhone or your smartphone, and you can swipe the credit card through your phone with this adapter and take credit cards that way. The thing I love about Intuit, they send you a Visa card, and within 24 to 48 hours, everything that you've charged minus the fees appear on the Visa card, so it's very seamless. And the rates are really exceptional. So that's a really great way for you to have a little more control over when you're out selling your books and being able to have the income from selling the books come immediately. The standard is still you'll sell about 50% more books if you can use the credit cards or their ATMs. And a lot of these services also have where you can put in the routing number and the account number for checks. So it really opens up a lot of different possibilities for people when they get there. Because I know a lot of people, when I'm speaking at book signings, they say, you know, I came here intentionally not wanting to buy, and now I've decided I want to buy, and I don't have my credit card with me, but they do have a checkbook with them. So you want to be able to take all kinds of different processes of payment. So the merchant account is really simple to set up now, and look into the Intuit one. That's my favorite so far. Now, there's a lot of different things that you can do to start promoting your book, and one is not only having the blog, but by creating joint ventures. And I am a huge fan of building relationships in social media. So the ones that give me the best result in this order are Facebook, LinkedIn, and selfgrowth.com, selfgrowth.com. And the reason why I like these sites is I have probably 50% of my connections on Facebook and LinkedIn are authors or someone to do with publishing, and I have a lot of really great connections that people that I've been working with and have referrals set up, so that when somebody says, you know, I absolutely want to be in a bookstore, which is not my preference, but they absolutely want to be in a bookstore, I have someone in New Jersey who will actually have your publisher drop ship the books to them. When you're doing an interview, he will actually fulfill the order. So he puts the label on the envelope, he puts the book in the envelope, he mails it, and he sends you the money within 24 to 48 hours. But he even takes the credit card information when people are calling in on a radio interview. So it's really seamless, because once you're out there doing, you know, three or four radio interviews a week, you don't want to be going down to the post office and mailing 100 books a day, because you have no time to do anything else. And then he charges $3 a book, which is covered under the handling fee. So when you see books $19.95 plus $4.95 shipping and handling, that's where that $3 comes from. So it makes it really nice for you to be able to have someone else do those things that are just really time-consuming. You can, once you know that you have your book coming in, you're going to want to set up a book signing at a local bookstore, invite your family and friends, use social media to get people to come there use events on Facebook, and it's very effective. So it's really a lot of fun to do a book signing. You're talking about what you've written in the book. You might even read portions of the book. And usually the average is to sell 25% of your audience, and anything above 25% is really great. So you want to look at everything that you can do to make the book signing as popular as possible, because when the bookstore has you come in to do a book signing, if you do really well, they're very open to having you come back two or three times a year. And that's a nice way for you just to get out into the community. And like in the Bay Area, there's, you know, hundreds of bookstores around here. We still have a lot of independent bookstores. So those are my favorite ones to do. I really enjoy doing the bookstores that have like a regular reading room where it's set up. They have chairs, an audience, a stage, the microphone. They have everything set up for you. And then there's some like the Barnes & Noble where you're actually just doing the book signing among the books within the store. And the positive part about that is that people who otherwise might not notice that you're there are kind of stumbling into it. And then because you're reading from the book, it's a little more enticing for them. Now, I also suggest that you take some media training. And what I mean by that, you're going to be doing some radio interviews, and you want to know exactly how to handle a talk show host. And being able to interact with a talk show host, being able to have the rapport with them, and be able to answer questions that they throw at you out of nowhere sometimes, or knowing when that you answer a question that you need to be able to be thinking, will this answer push people to my website? And so you don't want to give them all of the information, but enough information to entice them that they know that you've got great information to share, and they're going to go to your website to get more information and then buy the book. So media training really helps you clarify those points. And there's a big difference. On radio stations, I sell 25 to 100 books for every interview I do. And the difference primarily is the wattage of the radio station. And then after I did media training, I actually increased my sales by 50%. Because instead of giving all of the information, which is my natural tendency, I was able to give enough information to be enticing enough to want people to actually go find more information. That's what the key to a really good radio interview is. One of my favorite radio interviews was with Vince Tracy, who is in Spain, and I actually had to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to be on his radio program. He's primarily rock and roll, 50s rock and roll, but he breaks 2 times during his show to do an interview. And that break, I was on the interview, and the book was Create Your Own Reality, The Ancient Wisdom. And the caller called in and said, geez, aren't there enough people talking about the law of attraction right now? And without skipping a beat, I answered, is the world perfect yet? And then there was about 3 seconds of silence, which is very unusual on a radio program, and normally hosts know how to handle that. And then all of a sudden, the phone lines just lit up. And Vince said, well, I guess we don't have enough people. And the calls were just so much fun because it was controversial enough to inspire someone to want to respond, but it wasn't over the top. And you have to be very careful not to step on anyone's toes when you're doing a radio interview, even if you're trying to be controversial. So it's a very fine line that you walk when you're doing radio interviews. We can use social media to be able to get a lot of radio interviews. It's surprising how many people have their own radio shows, and especially here on Blog Talk Radio. And it's really a fun thing to do. I would suggest as an author, this is a great marketing tool to be able to have your own radio show and, you know, look at maybe having a co-host if you're not comfortable doing something like that. I've had many people from Facebook, do interviews for me on their Blog Talk Radio shows. And it's always a lot of fun, and it broadens your audience so that you're being able to get exposure to a lot of different people who would never otherwise even know who you are. The other way of using social media is to do educational interviews. So you can find people on Facebook and LinkedIn and self-growth that are aligned with your genre. So if your law of attraction, there is no limit to the number of people who are in law of attraction that you could say, you know, geez, I'd really like to take the time and interview you for a series. And most people don't realize how simple this is. I have usually a 50% ratio of asking someone if I can interview them to people who actually say yes. And so I'll set up an interview series. And the cool thing about this is being an author is you can take these interviews and turn them into the fodder for your membership site, which is another income stream for you. Because in reality, what you're wanting to do is to create at least 5 to 7 different ways that you're promoting the book so that you have income coming in from several different directions. So one would be the radio show interview where a host is interviewing you. Another is creating the interview series so that you can be creating a membership site and create a stable monthly income. Then there's public speaking where you're actually selling your books at events or creating a platform event where you're the star, you're the featured speaker, and you're bringing in maybe 5 or 6 other people who are related to your book in industry or genre. And then the whole event is based around you, and you can hire an event coordinator to do all this setup work, and then basically what you're doing is helping promote it through your social media contacts, but it's a wonderful way for you to be able to get exposure for your book that normally wouldn't take place. There's also teleseminars that you can do, and a teleseminar is very easy to set up. There's everything from free teleseminar lines to paying $10 a month. They'll record them, and again, those are another great way for you to be able to create information for a membership site. But a teleseminar, you might promote on the social media sites to get people to come in and listen to what you have to say on a weekly basis. And you want to create a lesson plan so people can actually follow through. And then that in itself becomes a product as well. So let's say you have a 6-week course on how to repair cars, and that's your book. Well, now you have an electronic version, which you can then commit to CDs. So you can burn CDs and have a 6-set audio program that you can sell when you're speaking and make it easier for people to understand the simple things that they can do to repair their own cars at home, which I'm sure is getting more and more complicated. But let's say you're a collector of cars that are classics. Maybe that would make it easier. Another great way of getting exposure and backlinks and more people to come to your website is to be able to submit articles to some of the e-zine directories. That's like magazine, electronic magazine online. There's many e-zine directory resources. One that most people are familiar with is called eZine Directory, and that has hundreds of thousands of newsletters, eZines online. You submit an article to them, and if someone picks it up, they include your signature, which is not only your name and the website name, but you also want to have a tagline. On one of mine, I have for your free ebook on how to write a book in 6 weeks, go to my website, list the website, and my name. So I always want my name and the website because I'm trying to gain that visibility through the search engines. So it makes it really easy to be able to get a lot of exposure, and I think that the articles has been one of the biggest ways that authors have been able to get exposure and have people get pushed back to their website. And you can take part of your outline and rewrite from your book so that you have unique articles. They should always be unique. And you'll be really amazed to see how much traffic that pushes back to your site. Now, joint ventures, there's a lot of people out there that you could set up where you send to your database, they send to their database, then you cross-pollinate your databases. Because when you're thinking about a membership site, the size of your database makes all the difference in the world as to how much income you're going to generate. The normal is once you have 10,000 people in your database, you should be able to sell 10% on a membership site concept, which would be at $10 a month, $10,000 a month income. So that's a really nice return on the time that you spend working to build the material through teleseminars, through interviewing people, and through joint ventures. So it's a great way of having a lot of different material designed and also to be able to build your database. There's also things like continuity programs, and I have not done a continuity program, but this works extremely well if it's something around cooking, like a health food book, or weight loss, or bodybuilding, where people are going to want to continue to get information. So one of the continuity programs that I subscribe to is Steve Harrison's, and it's automatically he sends out a CD, and I always look forward to it because there's so much valuable information. He'll interview very famous authors and give a lot of detail about what they went through, what their trials were, what things worked well, and it's interesting to hear it from each author's perspective. So I really appreciate having that continuity program. I think Brian Tracy has one that I used to get, and it was really great because it was all about sales and relationships. And so you can find a lot of different continuity programs, but if you have a topic where people are going to want information continually, this is a great way of doing it. And it makes it easier for you to communicate with people through the CDs that come in the mail and then constantly make yourself available to them through that process. And I have not done a podcast in quite a while, but I was doing podcasts on a regular basis, and there's through Apple and through a number of other sites, you can actually list your podcast. That will make it really easy for people to download it on their smartphones or their iPad. There's so many different ways that you can look at getting exposure, including having a book sponsorship. And I think Brandon Bouchard is the person who made this concept available for me. He has a great program where you think about people who could have an advantage from having their name on your book, and they might buy 100, 500, 1,000 books at a time and then use them as a campaign that they're doing. But the cool thing is that you're selling books in bulk and you don't have to sell one at a time. So that's another program that you can establish that makes it really easy for you to be able to get like my author Sue Kopacz, looking at people that could benefit from having her book and then having them buy 1,000 books at a time is really a way of establishing a base income without having to work as hard. So it's really a great thing for you to look at. There's cost per acquisition programs, and they're generally reserved for people who are making $50,000 a month, but I've noticed in the last few months they're becoming more available to the ordinary, everyday entrepreneur, which means you can have somebody put up a campaign for cost per acquisition, and you only pay when someone acquires your book. And so that's a nice way of being able to market your book without having to cost you a lot of money in marketing out of pocket. And then probably the most favorite way of getting your book out there for me is speaking, and I absolutely love speaking, and I have to tell you, this was something that I kicked and screamed, did not want to start speaking, and in 1991, my mentor, Ed Thorpe, took me to a Lions Club meeting in Walnut Creek, and just before we finished eating lunch, he leaned over and he said, "By the way, you're the speaker today." And I was mortified. I could have crawled under the table, but I had such respect for him that I got up and I said something for 20 minutes. I have no idea what I said. And for 6 months, he actually called a Rotary Lions or Kiwanis Club, booked me as the speaker. I went in, I did my 20 to 30 minutes. And then after 6 months, this woman came up to me and said that I actually helped save her business. And one of the concepts I had talked about, which helped her develop more of a referral business, and she was thrilled. So she came back to actually thank me. And that's what was the impetus to giving me the permission that I needed to feel like I had a right to be out there and be the speaker. So it was really incredible for me to be able to make sure that, you know, I was engaging with people. So one of the things that you also want to look at is reading your book back through an audio program. And I know that PCs and Maps both have some really great programs where you can actually read your book, break it up into chapters, and then you can have companies burn those to CDs for $1 a CD, including the label. So that's a really unique way for you to be able to create multiple products. And almost every time I speak, I will record my speaking engagement on a Sony digital recorder. And then when I transfer that into my computer, I can add intro music and the music that comes in on the tail end of the presentation. I can add titles to it. And now I can burn that to a CD and have another product. So over the years, people have asked me for things like, you know, how do you speak on a cruise? Well, I made a CD that actually tells you exactly how to speak on a cruise and have a working vacation, which is really one of my favorite things to do. I do love cruises. And so when people start asking you questions, make note of it, because that's the information that they're looking for, and that's what you want to provide them. Because when you actually are giving your audience what they're asking for, you create a very loyal fan base. And I promise you, once your first book is done, you're going to start thinking about what's the next book. And it goes on and on and on. When I bought my 10 ISBN numbers, that's the number where it appears on the back of the book so that the bookstores can actually scan it and know who the sales go to. I never thought I would use those 10 ISBNs, and I'm already almost through my second set of ISBN numbers. So my CD programs, some of them have ISBNs when I sell them in bookstores, and probably should end up with about 50 ISBN numbers if I did every one of my CDs. So I hope that you are encouraged and that you will come back next week and listen to The Secrets of Getting Published Now. And we're going to have a special guest next week who is an author, Danik Stephen Kaus, and he's going to be talking about what he went through to be able to get his book published. So you'll hear some insights from somebody who's actually gone through the process. Thank you so much for listening. Again, this is Sharon Abbott, your host, The Secrets of Getting Published Now.